Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey guys, stay tuned to the very end of this podcast and you'll hear a super exclusive interview with Scott Aukerman conducted by our friend Eddie Sharp. If you don't know how Scott Aukerman relates to this movie, he plays Austin Powers and Dr. Evil's dad in a flashback sequence. Enjoy the podcast, guys.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast.
Hello, horny babies, and welcome to another shagadelic episode of Mic Check with Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos, the only podcast where two comedians go through the entire filmography of Mike Myers just to check if it's good or if it is not good. And so far, pretty cool. It's actually been pretty cool so far. My name's Alexi Toliopoulos. With me, as always, is...
Hey, man, I'm Cameron James, and I like to call just collective groups of people man now. That's my new thing. Hey, yeah. Man, I'm Cameron James. I'm part of this show. I love Mike Myers. We're doing a very special episode today, dare I say it.
You dare, and who dares wins, and baby, you're a winner.
This is... exciting because this is the first time we've had to do a two-parter for something. A few weeks ago...
Well, not necessarily two. We've done two episodes on So I Married an Ex-Murderer and Wayne's World.
But they're not necessarily strict two-parters. Okay. I mean, this is the same cast coming back again.
Okay.
To discuss unfinished business.
Yes.
So a few weeks ago, we watched Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Yes.
Previously, formerly known as Austin Powers in Austin Pussy.
Yes.
And
it was a highly controversial episode. A lot of things were said. A lot of craziness was out there. And a lot of muck. We mucked around a lot.
And we came to no real conclusion as to whether it was a good or bad film.
And we talked for almost only an hour and a half about this film. And we did.
It's only 90 minutes.
We didn't quite cover everything that we need to talk about Austin Powers in Goldmember.
So we decided to bring the Goldmember foursome back together again. The swinging Dutchmen themselves. We brought... Please welcome back to the podcast, Tom Walker and Michael Hing.
Hello. Yay. Guys, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having us. I'm curious to know what the controversy in the previous episode was. Was there listener, like, was there feedback?
Was it the fact that Beyonce was almost certainly underage?
Maybe that was the main thing that we heard was people going, yeah, it is gross that we now found out that Beyonce maybe was 12 when they hooked up, when she got a taste of the honey, but now she wants the whole beehive baby. So what do you think? That's what we're going to talk about for 1 hour today is just that. So
just that very uncomfortable subject matter in the Austin Powers timeline continuum.
So, Michael, what do you think a taste of honey meant?
Oh.
Just kidding, guys. We're going to talk about daddy issues.
Yay!
Guys, let's get into it. Let's start talking about Austin Powers in Goldmember.
He defeated evil. He overcame huge obstacles. And he tracked trouble to its source.
Ooh, frisky, are we?
This summer, isn't it time for a little
Austin Powers.
Three, two, one.
I love gold.
So Austin Powers is back in Goldmember. He's found his mojo, baby, and now Austin is back again in this shagadelic comedy adventure. The shh hits the fan when Dr. Evil and Mini-Me escape from prison.
Wow, I can't believe you read the whole synopsis again. That's very dedicated of you. Congratulations. Thank you. Now, daddy issues. Daddy wasn't there. Daddy, daddy, daddy. This movie is about daddies.
It is. And can we give a bit of context for Mike Myers and his daddy issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
We touched on it a bit last episode, which is his dad had got an Alzheimer's.
Fascia.
Yeah.
What's that? His
father. His father.
Very tragic. He got Alzheimer's in the late 1980s.
Yes.
And then after that, Mike's comedy career, it's just him searching for approval in father figures. And it sort of reaches its zenith in this movie, because in this movie, he literally hires a man to play a character's lost father to come back.
He not only does that, but in this movie, I would say it is at its absolute peak, because the movie ends with both of Mike's most popular characters up to that point being reunited and appreciated by their father.
Yes.
Who, there's only one father, but Mike manages to be appreciated by him and loved by him twice.
Do you think it would have been cool if Wayne Campbell also came into the scene? And
yeah, because you've never seen Wayne's dad before.
And maybe Nigel's like, this is my other son from the 90s.
I didn't stop shagging when you were in frozen prison, Austin.
I've been shagging in Illinois, Aurora.
Yeah, he's been shagging.
Is that your, what is that? Is your Wayne?
Yeah, man. It's me, Wayne Campbell.
From
the film Wayne's World.
Oh, wow.
Alice Cooper.
Is this a weird dub?
This is so bad.
I haven't seen the film.
So Michael touched on it before, but let's talk about Mike and Spike, who is Spike Myers, is Mike Myers' real-life Fajr.
Yeah, and Spikel Myers.
Spikel Myers.
Now, I think I read somewhere he was a military man.
Yes, he was. He was from Liverpool, England. He had served in the army, and then they moved to Canada, and they raised a beautiful family of little Myers.
Now, I have been reading a book called Mike Myers Canada.
I just finished it.
Alexi has read and has given on to me to read. And it's pretty much all about Eric, a.k.a. Spike Myers.
Yeah.
And you get a good sense of the guy, even in the first chapter of this book, that Spike Myers was a jokester. Mm. And he also, fun fact, loved to speak in Cockney rhyming slang.
Yes.
Now, that's more of a London thing than a Liverpool thing, right?
I think he picked it up in the service.
Is he doing it ironically, or is he doing it as a?
Was Mike's dad doing it ironically?
You know what? It's strange. That didn't really come up in the book Mike wrote about his dad.
No, like, my dad was a real jerk. He was doing everything ironically.
No, because, like, for example, my
grandparents, I love you.
My grandparents would do Cockney rhyming slang as like a funny joke, right? Because obviously they are Chinese people living in Sydney, Australia, so why would they do that?
Well, I
wondered the extent to which a person from Liverpool would also find it ironic and funny that they were doing this thing that is from London. But I don't know.
Well, I think what we learned from Mike through the book Canada and through the film Goldmember, starring Austin Powers, is that Mike doesn't do that much irony. He's quite a sincere guy, and I think that his father, or
Fajr,
if you will, used this quite sincerely as a way to kind of keep in touch with his cultural heritage being from England. He may not have been directly from the Cockney area, East London, to be sure. to kind of bring the cultural, a sense of cultural awareness to his family of, like, they do have a rich cultural history outside of Canada.
From what I'm gathering from what I've read of the book so far, Spike Myers didn't like living in Canada and tried to keep their home basically like the UK. So they watched Coronation Street, and they had like football memorabilia all over the walls and everything. And he used to speak in rhyming slang, I guess. Yeah, like you're saying, to almost maintain a sense of home.
Mike Myers is quite a football fan as well, isn't he? He supports, there's a team I think he supports. That's such a vague fact. Yeah. There is a team he supports.
He's a sports fan. He loves the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, he does. Yeah, I mean, that's what I read. But also, I read somewhere that his dad was really into British comedies, like your Monty Pythons, etc. And so
Carry on.
Watching all of them, all of that garbage.
You know, like the Python dude?
I don't know. He's probably shit. I hate him.
You know, Monty Python isn't the name of the comedian.
It's not one guy.
Yeah. It's one guy.
It's a whole group.
Bro, you've got to get into them, really? Honestly.
You know who I hate?
I'll educate you.
I hate that Fawlty Towers guy.
Man, it's just like, mate, how faulty can one tower be? Get over it, mate. Get over it.
Run a proper hotel. What's wrong with you? Why did you get
Hello, my name's Fawlty Towers and I'm wearing a dress.
You're a bad hotelier, Fawlty.
He's not the hotel. He's a bigger hotel. See, that's the kind of comedy.
I got a book of the thing that got me like really into British comedy was this book I got of sketches by Peter Cook, who I really loved. But it was reading back on it now, it's incredible how many of the sketches from like, you know, in the 60s when review style humor was kind of coming into its own in England. It's just every sketch is man having disagreement with shopkeep.
Yeah,
it's just page after page, and it's different things of like a tailor being like, well, yes sir, the sleeves are meant to come off the shirt, meant to come off, I've never heard such nonsense. And you turn the page and it's like, well, yes sir, this house is meant to fall down, meant to fall down.
Yeah, but like, I mean, that's just like all comedy dates really badly, like across the board. Like, can you imagine people looking back at this time or like 2007 or whatever, and they'll just be like, oh, sketch comedy back then was just like, yeah, that is what it would be like if Hitler was on Facebook.
Oh, I guess you can say cum as much as you want.
Exactly. Just like, oh, I guess Mike Myers was a genre of comedy podcast. Like,
oh, back in the day when it was okay to be racist to Scotland.
Yeah.
Before the happening.
We are digressing from Mike's dad, but that's just something that keeps coming up every time I think about this movie. It's just how badly comedy dates. Like, it doesn't matter how much you enjoyed at the time. And I worry for what I do.
For what all of us do. But I think what we all do is timeless. Right? I bet everyone said that. I bet even when Peter Cook was writing those sketches, he was like, I reckon men in wigs will always be cool.
It's always going to be funny, dude. A man pretending to be a woman? That's silly, that's crazy, that's cool.
That's funny. The Footy Show is still doing it, still relevant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I say we should bring back the Biff. Let's fight dudes.
It's honestly not just a show about footy.
I mean, it's about Australia first, obviously.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so Mike Myers. So Mike is the biggest... Spike is the biggest influence for Mike in his entire life. He loves his father. His father loves him. They have a great relationship. His father is a big influence on him, showing him all this comedy stuff. And there's a great story in the book where I think it kind of perfectly encapsulates how important his father was to him. When Mike went to America to study at the Second City, he was taught by Del Close. Very famous improviser. Tom, can you agree to that?
Yeah.
Yes, and... Sorry.
Michael, thank you for showing us how that works.
Great punch up, King. That was great.
So he invented...
I didn't say that because I just... just an hour ago...
I'm smarter than you didn't think of it.
No, I thought of it, but then not an hour ago, it was posted in a group I'm in that is Things That Are Hack. Someone posted any use of the phrase yes and when making fun of improv.
Yeah. I don't think it's that hack because it's making fun of the hack thing.
Well, here we are. It's fine to disagree.
So he spoke to Mr. Del Close, and Del Close was talking about the importance of comedy and humor in everyday people out there. And he used an example of a time where he was in Canada and he met a very funny Liverpudlian man. And he was like, that guy was one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. And then Mike raised his hand, says, excuse me, Mr. Close, may I speak? And he said, Mr. Myers, you may. And then he said, that's my father.
What?
Yeah.
Now, was Mike lying at this point?
No, that was real. That was his real dad. His dad had an interaction with Del Close.
And then...
Unless Mike lied in the book. I mean, I don't know if he's a reliable bard.
Del has been... He's been waiting for Del to die. So he can finally be, like, abstract a compliment enough that he's like, the most famous improviser in the world thought my father was funny.
So it's clear that he has, at the very least, gotten a lot of his comedy love from his father.
Mm.
And this movie... I watched it again. I actually watched it twice in the last 24 hours.
No bragging, guys. We've all seen Gold Member multiple times. In the last, I was telling these boys before, in the last 2 years, I've seen 800 movies. And I've seen Goldmember probably 12 times in the last 2 years as well.
Wait, do you count that as 12 times or...
Just 12 movies. I'm only counting that as one movie.
Okay, okay, okay.
So...
It's incredible how much time you have when everything else in your life is on the rocks.
I think as well, Goldmember improves by watching it just... lots of times in a very short space of time.
It really does. Yeah. I'm getting Stockholm Syndrome for this movie.
But I was trying to figure out what exactly the struggle between Austin and Nigel is in this movie, because we know that they have had a falling out and that they have a tense relationship, but it's pretty vague on what the details of it are. You know, like, not, Daddy wasn't there is the catch cry for it, but why? Like, is it ever explored why Nigel wasn't interested in his son? Or
it's,
like,
correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's implied that he was away doing spy business.
Spying.
Yes.
And living that sort of... that heathen, pussy-loving...
Yeah. The guy was shagaholic. What can we say? He loves to shag.
And that also brings up the fact that he is a sexual competitor for Austin Powers in this film. Mm. So there's a weird dynamic there.
Well, the tragedy of this is he is exactly the father that Austin would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nigel, in his neglect, has made himself a smaller and just as neglectful Nigel.
A mini-me, if you will.
But that's the other thing. I mean, in terms of, like, cultural revolution, like, the advent of the pill, right, leads to, like, you know, women having choice in abortion.
Sexual
and
revolution.
And exactly. And so Austin Powers is far less likely to have a child, right? So it ends. What are you laughing about, Tom? I'm just saying, what is in the cultural context?
I'm definitely
right?
laughing at Cameron James saying the word sexual revolution.
I've done a paper on it.
I guess what I'm saying is,
come,
like,
see my show. It's all about gender politics. Cameron James, 88. I'm at Perth Fringe, Brisbane Comedy Festival, Melbourne Comedy Festival.
What are your bits? Run us through your bits.
Abortion, yay or nay.
And where do you land on?
I let the audience decide.
Okay, that's good.
You let them decide whether it's
okay
or not.
I have another bit called I'll Listen to You, where I just get all the women in the crowd to talk, and I just listen.
So that's one of my favorite bits of yours, actually.
Would you say you're an ally?
Yeah, that's what I close on.
Okay. I saw Cam do one of the bravest bits of crowd work I've ever seen, which is he just was like, he did the classic, oh, what do you do for work? But he did it to a woman, and when she replied, all he did was say, thank you. And then he walked off stage.
Just twirling the mic as he walks off.
Oh, real young man.
Gross.
But I think as well, if we're looking at this through the lens of Spike Myers. So the sad thing about this movie that kind of bummed me out this time was not just Fat Bastard in the movie, but there's other things that made me sad, was just that Mike's dad was always there for him. Until he wasn't, when he kind of succumbed into the darkness of Alzheimer's. Mm. And that was when Mike Myers started achieving the greatness that would become, you know, the guy that made Shrek 5 times, you know, that guy. So it was him, it was when he got SNL, it was when, that's when he really wasn't there. He was kind of, couldn't really communicate with his father. And this movie is about how his dad is not there for all his achievements.
So he
really wants to make his dad proud. So I think his dad, Mike never needed his dad's acceptance, because his dad was always so in love with him and so proud of him all the time, until it was when that he could actually go out there on his own and achieve greatness.
So the reason you're sad is because Austin has reconnected with his father, but we know, due to our metatextual knowledge, that Nigel is going to, within a month or so, develop severe Alzheimer's.
No. It's that this film is about...
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's not at all what I'm saying, dude.
Okay, cool.
Are dumb and bad.
Yeah, have you ever had a conversation before, dude? Because you're not picking up anything that I said.
No, so you're saying that, like, the father in the film will definitely be the same as the father in the
No, sir. What I'm saying is the father in the film
just
was never there for
trend.
Any of his achievements.
Mm. And that's interesting, because it's like Mike has obviously had to abstract his grief and put it onto something more palatable, which is the deadbeat dad narrative.
A horny dude. Having another horny boy
around.
Horny
dad.
Yep.
How horny are your dads, Tom?
Well, don't make me pick just one, Michael. I'll rank them in order from most horny to least horny. I won't do that, because my dad, I found out, listened to the last podcast. I got a text from my mum that said, father listening to your podcast about Goldmember. I'm half listening, don't really understand it. He says it's good.
Why did your parents listen to this show?
So, Mr. Walker, if you're listening, how horny are you?
Don't
tweet at
us. Tom Walker is good. Let your boy know don't how horny you me. Are.
Tweet it. I am Cameron James.
Yeah,
dad.
I'll take it. I'll pass it on to Tom. I'll screenshot it.
Tom's dad is great. Tom's dad is on Twitter and will occasionally tweet nice reviews about Tom's work.
Oh, really?
Very supportive. Really
nice. That is nice. Well, Tom's
my dad has
dad
one of those egg accounts where he tells me to kill myself. Just every now and again. Makes new ones every now and again.
My dad has burner phones.
Takes me the word.
Just to troll me. Imagine having a horny dad that was so horny that, like, he was always trying to root the girl you were into as well. Like,
Nigel here really reminds me of Shane Warne.
Yeah.
I reckon this is how it would feel.
Nigel had a fucking text. Like, if he could text, he'd be unstoppable. He's got a real warny vibe, but when he's talking to Beyonce, who I will remind listeners... is 19 years old.
20.
All right, sure. Maybe.
But certainly 12 when they first meet.
Certainly 12. Nigel is talking to her like she's Mae West. Like, he's just like...
He's a real charmer.
Yeah, he's really hitting all the hard-hitting notes that a Shagadelic spy would hit. And it's
charming. The guy's got a way about himself.
Now, what do we know about this actor?
Would you say this is Sadadelic?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
What do we know about the actor who plays Mike's dad in this film?
Michael Caine.
What is he, like a famous guy or what's his
deal? Yes, Michael Caine is actually one of the world's most famous men.
Really?
He starred in many movies from the 1960s.
Was he in Monty Python?
Today. No, he was in a series called The Ipcress File, which is a spy movie from the 1960s, which was probably the biggest inspiration for Austin Powers next to James Bond, Peter Sellers.
Yeah, because that's where Mike Myers gets the glass. Glasses from apparently.
It's true. Anyway,
I wasn't. Have you already talked about that? What are you? What?
Just watching you feed coins into the Alexi bot.
So, what do you think? I'm curious about this. What do you think Mike is trying to do through this film? Is he trying to purge the anger he felt towards his father for disintegrating mentally? Because there's a line in there where he says to his dad, "I didn't need a friend, I needed a father." Does Mike feel that his dad was more of a buddy than a dad?
Oh
to
my
him?
God, Jesus. He may have. That's so scary.
Well, it's a line.
I can't believe you've watched this film 12 times and you're still having revelations.
If only I could decode this, that is literally a line in the
film. Well, you know the great works, you see it and you learn something new every time.
But
and
this isn't like you're going deeper in text. You're just not even looking up.
It's not even subtext.
It's text. No,
It's like an Uber text. It's like above the text. It's not even written. It's a man just yelling
in
at your face.
I heard that he handed in the script printed on just the backs of photos of his dad.
Now, what about in terms of Mike's career? Where does he go after Goldmember?
Right after this, sadly,
that's where Trek starts. Right,
sadly, he goes on to Cat in the Hat.
Cat in the Hat, Trek. But
Shrek was already happening.
Yeah, right. Shrek had just started, but he goes deeper into Shrek. He goes real deep into Shrek.
Love Guru as well.
Love Guru's after this.
So, but those films do not deal with the daddy stuff. This is where
Shrek has got no father.
Yeah,
Shrek's got no mum, no dad. So, he's just a beast out in the wilderness.
It really does suggest that artistically he does purge this kind of like feeling and thoughts.
We've talked about this. We've talked that Shrek represents where Mike was at that time in his life because he just wanted to be left alone because he put everything out there.
Did he write Shrek?
No. But it was written for... It was rewritten for him.
Right. Yeah. And there's also... I think this may be him... like definitively dealing with his father issues in this film. Because the next film he made, Cat in the Hat... We didn't discuss this on there... but I found an interview with Mike Myers a couple of days ago... where he talks about how if Austin Powers is the love letter to his father... Cat in the Hat represents a love letter to his mother because she read him Cat in the Hat as a kid and it's about how she used to tell him stories.
Everybody gets a movie.
I hope I get to meet Mike so he makes one for me.
It was called The Fucktest Comedian I've Ever Met.
Well, God. Okay,
the
so
little,
I can see
the
that.
Little open micer who could.
It kind of bummed me out. Well, you've raised a good point. Maybe it is the definitive daddy issues movie for him, because
I think it's a definitive daddy issues movie full stop for the world. This
it's
is
so
where everyone
obvious.
Can put everything
because it's
in
not
there.
Just about Austin and his dad or Dr. Evil and his dad. You know, and we talked about it a little bit last time, but there's a Dr. Evil mini-me power play with Scott as well. Like, everyone is having dad issues with everyone.
Almost every character in this movie has a dad.
Yeah.
And an on-screen dad.
In the same way that Hamlet has a play within a play, this has a daddy issue within a daddy issue.
And it's also...
It's dads all the way down.
I've read Shakespeare.
All the dads are almost all the same bloke. Like, Mike is a dad and Michael Caine is a dad. And that's it. And then he plays his own sons.
What? No. Vern Troyer is a son. And also,
yeah, but he's a clone of Dr. Evil, so also, it's just mini Mike as well.
Also, Scott... Like Evil is not,
but his dad is still his dad is still Mike
Myers.
This
is an indefensible point.
his dad is still Mike Myers.
That was dumb as hell.
Oh, okay, strike it from the record.
what you wanted to say was Michael Caine plays the father, and Mike Myers plays Austin Powers.
But Mike is also the father to two warring sons.
Why don't we put you back where you're comfortable, and you just start listing the cast from different movies again? Like a security blanket.
Who is the cinematographer on this film?
Dennis Finch.
We find solace in facts. I think part of the reason this is such a big daddy issues film is because I think he realized he'd trapped himself in a genre where he had to eventually address his daddy issues.
Oh,
because this is a genre that he and his father loved. And it's the comedy that... Or it's parodying a genre that he and his father loved. And it's the comedy that he and his father loved. And he'd done it twice and then realized that, oh, God, where
There's
do
no
I go with this?
No one else to turn
it in. Yeah.
It's like when Louis C.K. talks about how he has to write a new hour every year. And he's like, where can I can only talk about Chinese restaurants and the Super Bowl for so long.
Yeah.
And he looks inner and inner. And this is what you find in Inner Darkness. Interestingly, this film, the original cut of it I read was 3 hours long. Yeah.
What? I read that today as well.
Jay Roach's Hearts of Darkness? What is this?
Jay Roach's cut is 3 hours long.
I would give anything to see that cut.
So you gotta think, like, what's the original Austin Powers film, Matt?
They're all like 90 minutes.
Yeah, they're super quick, right? Yeah. And then this, imagine if it was like 90 minutes, 78 minutes, and then this or whatever, and it was 180 minutes of daddy issues and comedy. Like, it would that would have been, I think, the biggest, like the best trick the devil ever pulled. It would be so good.
What do you think that cut would do to you watching it? A 3 hour
text my dad
goofy comedy.
Yeah, at the very least. I think
how would you know his number? He's just throwing his phone.
I can't picture it having any more jokes than it already has. I think the rest of the film would just be exposition and slightly too genuine musical numbers.
I picture it having more story, though.
Yeah.
It's pretty, like, it's... There are big chunks of time where there's no story happening.
You want to see them a bit more fish out of water, but the water bowl, etc. That thing in the 70s. You want to see a little bit more of that.
They're barely in the 70s in this, hey.
Well, yeah, it's a three-minute sequence. You probably want to see Beyonce adjusting to, like, modern life as well a bit.
Oh, that's probably why it's on the cutting room floor.
No, I reckon Tom's going on to something. I reckon there would have been, like, maybe 3 or 4 more songs.
Yeah.
Because you think, there's the rap, there's the daddy wasn't, there's the literal daddy wasn't there song. Mm-hmm. There's got to be, like...
There is another song that was cut from the movie. There was I know this for a fact. It's a musical sequence that was cut, which is, it plays during the credits, that What's It All About, the Alfie theme song, but it replaces Alfie with Austin. And there's a whole What's It All About Austin sequence where it's after the breakdown of the relationship between Austin and Nigel, where everyone's gone separate ways. And it's a montage that follows every character, and they sing along to the song as well.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And that's where the scene in the credits that's discarded of number two sitting next to young number two and taking off a wig sadly comes from.
Oh,
and so they recycled some of that into the credits.
Yeah, and it's also got Fat Bastard doing a shit on the toilet where he's like, what's it all about, Austin? And
just was like, that parodying, like, Paul Thomas Anderson Magnolia sequence.
It must have.
Something?
It's got a very similar vibe to that kind of thing.
I'm glad they cut it.
That is the kind of thing when I watched it after, it did hit me. I was like, oh man, this is the last Austin Powers movie. And I teared up. That's where it got me.
And you know what? I actually feel like after watching this again, I do think it is the last one because I can't see where else it could go. And it's got so many cyclical jokes that tie back to the first one, the sharks with the freaking laser beams. Yeah.
Also kind of a riff on Indiana Jones?
Yeah, I guess so. Because it's the same kind of thing where Last Crusade, you get Sean Connery to play yada, yada, yada. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Well,
guys,
you know
everyone
let's go on with the synopsis.
If that's your logic.
Let's name some other celebrities.
If that is your logic, then what that means is in about 20 years, we're going to get another Austin Powers
Austin Powers Crystal Skull.
Finally, Austin goes supernatural.
Yeah. Yes.
That would be awesome. I think that would be fantastic. Just kidding, guys. But, but you know, it's like, where could they go from this? Because Scotty Evil becomes the bad guy now.
I think you reset. So obviously, one is the initial parody, right? Two is the extension of the parody. Three is the parody of the parody.
Mm-hmm.
Four's got to be a reset. It's got to be a reset. You can't parody the parody.
You need
of the parody.
A young Austin. Maybe we could do split Shia
LaBeouf.
Time on. Shia LaBeouf.
He's in there resetting the whole thing.
Yeah.
Austin Powers, like it meets up with his son. And then the cycle continues.
Oh, God.
And then Austin Powers is like the perfect dad now that he's met his son type thing.
It's just Mike writing a film about how good a dad he is.
That's interesting. How many children does Mike Myers have?
I think he's got two kids.
And they're new. They're relatively new. Like, he's had them in the last 6 years or so.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Okay. And he does often talk about how he loves being a dad now.
Yeah, and he did call one of his kids Spike Myers after his own dad.
Yeah,
what celebrity have you heard in an interview who's just had two kids be like, I fucking hate being a dad? Like,
Louis C.K.
And it's actually funny the way he says it.
And
like, it's really funny.
Like, he turns it into a routine. He turns it into a full routine.
He's so good.
Yeah.
He's like, my kids are assholes.
Mr. Louis C.K.
What's his name?
Louis C.K.
But it's spelled with a K.
Is that
at the end.
Is that like S-E-E-K-A-Y?
No, it's just the letters C-K.
What's it stand for?
C-K.
C-K.
He's like Polish or some shit, and it like translates to his real name pronunciation.
He actually does a new hour every year.
Of comedy.
Of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it's really...
And he writes, produces, directs, edits his own shows. Man, I could talk to you about him for ages.
Yeah, he's so good, man.
He's actually really funny. Like, talks about his daughters heaps, and they're like, they're two little grubby snot noses, is what he says the whole time. But then you get the sense that he really does love them.
He's got this incredible work ethic where he writes a new hour every year, but he still finds time to jerk off in the comedy stage back room in front of Jen Kirkman.
Yeah,
allegedly.
He said it wasn't him.
Alexi, who was the cinematographer for Louis?
David Finch, dude.
I'm pretty sure it was actually Louis C.K.
Yeah, he does everything. What he does is he sets the camera up and then just goes, I'm going to go for one, guys, and then walks off.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And then he starts acting. And it's actually really good.
I never thought I'd say this. Yeah, I never thought I'd say this, but we need to get back to talking about this.
This is my news.
All the listeners are gone. Let's just start saying secrets. Oh, my God. I killed a man.
Oh.
5 years ago, I killed a man.
Oh, well, it doesn't count. It doesn't count if you say it on a podcast.
Statute of limitations is up. It's only 5 years.
All right, sorry. Let's get back on track. We were talking about Scotty Evil, okay?
Yep.
Scotty Evil and Dr. Evil's relationship. Did we talk about that last time?
We touched on it.
I think it's good. I liked what they've done with it this time around.
Which is what?
Which is that Scott is now trying to impress Dr. Evil rather than the other way around.
Because you've got to flip it. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's not trying to be a cool dad anymore. It's the son wants to be the evil son with the approval of
daddy. And I think it's a nice whip. It's an obvious switch maybe, but I think it's nice because we get to see different dynamics from each of them.
And I think the performances are sold so well. Like, I think I truly do buy Scotty Evil doing like that physical metamorphosis into his father, like losing the hair and start doing the insane laughs.
His awful laugh is one of the funniest things in this movie for me.
Absolutely. And him losing the hair and stuff is very funny as well. Just like this blood and cuts and stuff, and he's just trying, it's going bald. So great comedy.
And I think I love Dr. Evil as a father. I think in The Spy Who Shagged Me, it's his relationship with Mini-Me, where you start seeing that he does have the love that a father is capable of having, like that kind of undeniable, just pure love for this little being. And now it just to see it be placed on his son and to see that dynamic change of Scotty Evil not really knowing what to do with that love as well, I think is so funny and just also very sweet.
Is it ever acknowledged that Michael Caine is Scotty Evil's grandfather in the film? Do they ever deal with that dynamic? Because that's quite interesting.
Yeah, they never bring it up.
Kind of at the end.
No, but well,
Scotty Bale.
Because like, wouldn't you want like? That's weird, right? Because now Scotty's evil, but his grandfather has to start that grandfather relationship with him. Take him on a bushwalk.
Yeah.
Buy him a porno. I don't know. What did your grandfather's
neither of those.
Well, my granddad didn't do that, but your granddad took me on a bushwalk.
And he found the porno out in the bush.
Yeah, and that was cool. Yeah. So, see, at the end of the movie, everyone embraces love, but Scotty don't.
Scotty don't. Scotty nepa. Oh,
how long have you sit on that for, Cam?
About 30 seconds. to be honest, I was kind of thrown by the granddad thing, but I had to find a way to tie it back in. I think I got there by my own secular logic. I kind of think it's interesting to me because Scotty is the one trying to bridge the gap with his own father in this one. Am I just reading too much into it, or is that something that Mike would have had to do with his own dad who couldn't connect with him in the last years of his life?
Oh boy, yeah.
You know what? I don't think there are. Dudes. I don't think there are any Alzheimer's parallels in this film, and that's one of the things that makes it so interesting to me is that this is a film about fathers, but it's very much not about Mike's lived experience of losing his father.
Mm.
Like, it's about a father situation, which is all common, and we recognize it. We're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, the deadbeat dad is a very common trope, but none of it seems to be about Mike's own relationship with his dad. It's just the things that surround it that I think would evoke quite a strong response from Mike, like the Burt Bacharach, the movie genre that he used to love and watch with his dad, and that comedy.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Tom. I think the stuff that makes it about Mike Myers' own lived experience is subtextual. It's not the actual thing of saying daddy wasn't there because his dad was there. It's, you know, yeah. Although, interesting that I was looking at the lyrics of that song, and in that bit where he's sort of listing all the different things where his dad wasn't there, one of them is when I was circumcised.
Yeah.
His dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
Well, like, how would you remember?
And also,
unless it was an adult circumcision. And also, why were you circumcised? I don't know.
Is Austin in the tribe?
Okay, let's try and put this together. So I know for a fact Mike Myers married a Jewish woman in the early 90s. Robin Rosen, who did write the Dr. Evil raps in both of the Austin Powers films.
Really?
She wrote them very quickly as well, and that's why they're in there.
Very quickly. That's a sign of good writing.
No, but it was, they were all very impressed with how fast you could write these like kind of very skilled rap songs.
What do we call that? Lexi.
Well, you know, for, you know,
for a Jewish woman.
Yeah. From the perspective of a madman as well. So they're pretty good. I think they're fucking awesome, dude. Dr. Eve was my favorite rapper. Dr. Evil's my favorite rapper. My favorite reggae artist is Sebastian the Crab. So I think there's a lot of good
art.
Dr.
Evil isn't even my favorite rapper who is a doctor.
What do you guys think of the rap in this?
It's real bad.
Is it problematic?
I don't care if it's problematic or not. Bad. I don't want to have that conversation, but I wish he didn't say nizzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You texted me that earlier saying, then, Dr. Evil saying nizzle is a low point in this film.
But again, I keep coming back to this, but I keep wondering whether or not Austin Powers, whether Mike Myers writing this film is saying that is the kind of lame rap that Dr. Evil would do because he's trying to be cool.
Trying to be cool to impress people.
We've seen him trying to be cool before now. But I don't think I don't think that it has that level of detachment in this particular rap song. I think Mike Myers literally thinks this is a cool rap song.
Well, and I think it's a bit too current day as well for it to be daggy.
I sort of agree with you, Hing. I think that they had to be aware that he's parodying being cool, because you've got him wearing like the furry visor and all this like cliche gangster Coast gangster gear, but like
I don't think
they are Cam, pretty impressed.
Just so you know, you gotta say gangster with an A at the end.
No, I'm saying it with a hard R.
Okay, well, I don't like that.
But I also think they're pretty impressed with themselves for coming up with a rap that is kind of technically alright.
And in 2001 rap, like,
rap was cool.
No, in 2001, rap was still like a quote-unquote funny thing for someone to do, right? Yeah. Like a comedy rap was still a thing.
Is this pre-Eminem?
It is just... Eminem kind of breaks 1999, 2000. Okay. So Eminem is just... This is what I was saying. I don't know if I talked about this last week, but it's like at the point... So Jay-Z is considered like probably the best rapper of his generation in that time period, right?
He's a rap god.
Yes, you know. He refers to himself as Hove, right? Short for Jehovah, obviously. Look. Then you have Dr. Evil parodying a Jay-Z song in a movie with Jay-Z's wife, Beyonce, at a time when Eminem, the first massive, big, aggressive white rapper, is coming up. And so there's this weird challenge.
Well, Debbie Harry, pretty aggressive, dude. So
yeah, well, like, sure. But you have this like challenge to the quote unquote the throne of Jay-Z. From Eminem,
Dr. Evil,
From Eminem in a competitive commercial sense, and then from Dr. Evil in like a comedy parody sense, and it's really odd.
Do you think that Mike Myers cucked Jay-Z making this movie? Is that what you're getting at?
I think honestly, I think he was trying, right? Because he's like singing one of Jay-Z's songs. He's there with Jay-Z's wife, who they're not in a relationship, but obviously they were in a relationship. Yes. Like it's so dodge. I hate it.
Do you think as well,
it's just creepy as fuck.
I think the reason why this rap doesn't like offend my taste so much is because I think the Britney Spears cameo is far worse than this.
Yeah, it's much more dated to me. And I mean, the rap thing is really on the nose and very like of its time as well, but it makes sense character-wise, but in the middle of the Soul Bossa Nova song to drop into Britney Spears' forgotten single Boys, it's so gross and so obvious.
Is that a studio agreement, do you think? Is Britney at the height of her powers at this? This is before Britney shows her head, right?
Yes, that's 2007. I'll never forget that year, bro. I'll never
and
forget.
And famously,
holy shit, Alexia. Summer of Love. I'll never forget.
Do you
forget
know
it.
Any useful facts?
None whatsoever.
Alexi, is it true that she shaved her head to look more like Dr. Evil?
Finally, I'll look like my favorite rapper.
That'll give me some musical cred down at the arias.
I hate that Boys clip because so no one even remembers that song. It's not a big hit
but
of a song.
When was that? Was it of its time? Was it huge?
It must
was it everywhere.
It was part of the bloody soundtrack of Goldmember.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Is it a studio agreement then?
It must have been because
I can't picture Mike asking for this.
It's so ham-fisted into this film. Are they making fun? Because it's in the film, within the film.
So.
Making fun of the way people ham-fist these fucking songs into
I think it would have been a matter of them going, you know who would be great to get as another cameo? Britney Spears. Mm. And then her people said, only if we have her song in
it. And you're right. No, that does make sense. Because that opening sequence is really kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Because it has all these massive names you're not expecting. We did talk about it last week. But then...
It's in the best context, Austin Powers movie. Austin Pussy.
Yeah.
I think that's the lowest point.
Danny
of this
DeVito
whole
is
film.
The greatest mini me.
Yeah. He is.
But you're right. That sequence with Britney is sort of embarrassing and almost undoes the opening sequence.
And it's because she, like, Mike says that, like, oh, it's cool. She stayed with us for 20 hours through this sequence and she was so game for, you know, messing with her persona. I'm like, what persona are you fucking talking about, bro? Because all she's doing is pretending to be a robot fembot with shooting bloody bullets out of her jubblies.
And then
it's like kind of like almost sexy. Like, this is probably the least horniest thing in the movie for me because, you know, Britney Spears, she's an attractive woman, but this is like so weird. Like, it's so, like, to have her as this robot person. And, you know, in real life, she's kind of been... discovered her persona kind of became someone who's quite down to earth, kind of like a tragic figure in real life, God. You know? Like, she's right now living in like Elvis post dying on the toilet phase of her career. And for this to have been at like the very height of it all, it just doesn't make sense. Because when Elvis was that big, he still had like a persona that he would muck around with. But I don't know what
they
were trying
to do.
You could
almost say that in this film, Britney passed the torch to Beyonce.
Oh boy, yes. That's it.
I think Britney did show that she was fine to play around with her persona because there is a credit scene where it's revealed that she didn't die and is going to fuck Mini-Me.
Oh, what?
What? Yeah, I forgot about that.
I didn't see that.
She goes up to... There's a scene. Mini-Me is standing there and
He's standing next to a Pepsi logo.
And sorry, is he in Mini-Me outfit or is he in Mini-Austin outfit?
He's in Mini-Me hip-hop outfit where he's got the tie-dye down it.
Yeah. And so she asks, so is it true what people say about you? And he whispers in her ear and she says, tripod?
Oh, here, okay.
Can I give you my number? And then that's the scene.
Do you think that's canon?
Yeah, dude.
That's 100% canon, bro. Britney Spears is alive and she's dating Mini-Me.
You heard it here first.
does Mini-Me hook up with anyone else?
No.
Beyonce's leg.
Yeah, he humps a few legs. Yeah. I think in Austin Powers 2, he humps a giant laser.
Right, yes.
I don't think that counts. That's great. Yeah.
That's a great bit.
But,
Tom, is it?
No matter what, that bit makes me laugh really hard when he hits it.
All right, let's talk about things that we liked this time around about this movie. And can I go first?
Yes.
Because last time, you guys made fun of me a little bit for saying that I liked all the mole stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, I watched it. I didn't laugh except for... the very last mole gag where number three is just standing there and then you see a stick come in to the frame and then it cuts to the wide and Austin is poking the mole with a stick from like a meter and a half away.
That's really funny because I feel like that's the broadest Mike has ever been is in that scene, like doing the double takes of the mole there.
Yeah.
Very funny.
It's really broad and it's such a dumb gag that he would have to go grab a stick from somewhere and come back... and poke him with it. I thought it was funny. I don't care. I don't care what you guys think. It's really dumb.
I think that's great. Tommy, was there something that you laughed this time?
This time around, I laughed really hard at the mole.
Yeah. Yes!
Oh,
the mole's coming back!
Every mole bit, I was like, this timing is so funny.
Yeah.
And everything Mike's doing is really good. I caught myself laughing because I've taken a viewing it now in a slightly different way. And I'm viewing it, looking at it, and thinking about what's in the script.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Goldmember. I laughed at the line, I love gold.
Mm.
Because I was like, that is the perfect line reading for that.
Yeah.
That is the best that line will ever be.
No one can say it better.
I love gold!
It's such a nothing line. And that's the thing. Mike can really spin something funny out of something half-assed.
And no one is doubting his like skill as a performer.
Yeah.
And it's intoxicating to watch. The other thing I laughed at, just and one last thing, because I find I laugh so much in this movie, and I find that really strange, but here we are, was Fat Bastard hanging in the wires, and there's one shot where it's a still shot of Fat Bastard's chest as he's spinning, and he rotates slowly into shot, and he says, "Well, this is magical."
I'm kind of back where we were last time. I think that Fat Bastard sequence with the pulleys and the wires is a low point for this movie, because it really breaks the world.
The rest of it is no good for me, but for some reason, Fat Bastard... Mike saying specifically, "Well, this is magical," sarcastically and just with one look in his eyes, really got me.
If they'd committed and he'd said it in Mike Myers' voice rather than Fat Bastard voice, maybe, I don't know. But
I think the whole Japan sequence is really... it's quite flat.
It's kind of... and it just feels kind of out of nowhere, because in the past Austin films we've only been in England or America or space.
I think which is a type of America, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that Japan is just kind of a bit esoteric for them to choose.
I also think there's no personality given to Japan in this movie, because it's all shot in doors.
Studios.
On stages.
Yeah.
They're mostly apartment or generic lab settings.
It's literally... what happened was literally they were like, "We need Fat Bastard to get it. It wouldn't be funny if he was a sumo.
Totally.
Let's reverse engineer it from that."
And also Mr. Roboto to have that gag.
Let me
well.
Tell you, Mr. Roboto, I want to get into this because we didn't touch it last time. I think the whole Japanese sequence fails because of Mr. Roboto. Why? The guy's not an actor. Do you know who he is?
Who?
No.
He's Nobu. He's the creator of the Nobu restaurant with Robert De Niro. He's a sushi chef.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
That was a professional sushi chef?
Yes. He's like one of the great modern day chefs. And they got him in there. And the only other credit he's in movie-wise is in the Robert De Niro Martin Scorsese film Casino.
Himself?
Yeah, basically.
He plays sushi chef or something?
No, I think he plays like a Japanese... they're called whales, where they're like the big cash cows at the casino.
But he makes a point to loudly say, "I got this money from sushi."
Yeah. But it's just
love sushi.
Please, Nobus, please stop riffing. Stop adding sushi lines.
I think it's so bad. Like, why wouldn't you just cast a funny bloke in the role? It's sort of just Robert De Niro's mate that you've hung out with a few times.
Yeah, he doesn't have a hell of a lot of charisma.
He's
on
got
screen,
no personality.
And I sort of think they were clearly hoping that the set piece with the misread subtitles was going to be like, you know, one of their iconic scenes.
That's
and it's
funny because in the Leonard Maltin review, he describes that as a highlight.
Wow. I think it's a low point.
I think it's aged really badly, that scene, because to me, the timing is way off. I think there's so much air left in there for you to laugh in, but now that's not funny anymore because it's kind of like we've seen it a little bit now.
Yeah.
It's done almost better in Wayne's World because it serves a character purpose.
It's done way better in Wayne's World. And also, it's done better even earlier in this film when they do the Cockney rhyming slang and the subtitles.
It's basically that pullback and reveal gag that he does actually in the very first Austin Powers opening, I think, where he's naked and there's like... hiding his dick behind it's the same kind of gag.
It's the same kind of
gag.
But
the thing is, here, where their missteps are, is they outsource the timing to this guy, who is not an actor but a sushi chef, and Beyonce, who is an actor in this movie and nothing else.
Oh, God.
Like that, Dreamgirls, dude.
Sorry. Who's the videographer on that?
That's Dennis Finch.
But yeah,
I got a lot of work.
Yeah.
I fucking hate the old guard, man. When are they going to step aside?
It's these fucking union rules, man.
Let us the young guns in, huh?
But yeah, like all the timing in this scene and the Mr. Roboto scene is so useless. If you watch it, like I was watching it today and I realized I was watching Austin Powers in Goldmember in a food court and I was like, this is a no good.
Yeah.
How were you doing that on your phone?
On my laptop.
Oh, right. I thought you were like streaming it somewhere off Netflix or whatever, wasting your data on this.
That scene is so short and nothing happens. They go in, they ask for something, and then he says, "Well, maybe I should speak English. I can't help you. I have another appointment now." Gets up and leaves.
Yeah, I don't even know what the point of the Mr. Roboto character is. I can't even remember what plot device he serves. I know he gets killed by the
sharks. He makes the satellite,
the
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
He makes the key.
The problem with the Japan sequence for me is it's too many recycled jokes, not only from other Austin Powers movies, but even from this movie. Mm. Like, there's the scene where he has to piss to make it look like the statue is coming.
Come on, dude.
Okay, that is funny.
That's funny.
But it's a callback to the first movie where he did the long piss in the, you know, unfreezing
scene. Well,
that's
what we know about Austin, is he's got a humongous bladder.
Yeah, and that's fine. Yeah, I can deal with that. But then the next joke after that is he stands behind the statue and it looks like he's pissing into the guard's mouth.
Yeah, that's not great.
And that feels like a throwback to the shadow scene from part two. But then the next gag this is the shadow joke again. So it's just like three...
It's not the next gag. It's a little further down the line.
It's like a minute or two later.
It's like 10 minutes.
Dude, I don't think so.
I've saw the 3-hour cut, dude. It's 10 minutes later. But I see those gags I can kind of forgive. I think they're funny. I think they're cool. I think they're sexy. But I don't know. I think the Japan stuff is a bit of a low point because there's no character to it all. The only character is that we see Mount Fuji in the background of every shot. That's kind of funny, but it doesn't read straight away as a gag.
Why do you think that's funny?
Because it's showing that this is like, it's making fun of how low budget they're not shooting on location kind of thing is. And I think it's not laugh out loud funny, but it's humor. I would say maybe I'll correct myself saying it's not funny, but it's humor.
It's sort of, I guess it's showing that this is not reality. Mm. This is a sort of,
it's a cartoon.
Fake Japan or whatever, because it kind of reminds me of that fucking Mr. Accident movie, Yahoo Serious, who is Australia's Mike Myers, I would say. And almost every scene in that movie has the Harbour Bridge in the background of it, no matter where they are in Sydney.
It's just an easy gag. I'll talk about maybe one of my biggest low points is a right at the end of the movie, fat bastard losing weight is real. That's, I hate the look of that character not being fat.
And that Jared from Subway reference has not aged well.
That's like almost the last line of the movie.
But who do you think will be a better mascot for Subway right now? Like, Jared's not in the picture. I mean, Fat Bass is a known murderer, but he's probably a better mascot for them.
Just Fat Bastard's neck skin would be a better
It's just
mascot.
So upsetting to look at. It's
no good.
Real upsetting.
And can
it's
I say
so
this?
Bad.
I hate the vagina line.
What's the vagina line?
Where he says, looks like a vagina. Oh. Can you do an impression of it?
No, I was just going to say, it's like, it's the line that leads you up to, like, there's two flaps, and then in the middle there's the line.
You idiot!
I hate you. I hate that line where he says, my neck looks like a vagina. It's such a sour note to end this movie on, which is... It's such a, like, gross body-shaming line to be like...
But, like, that's what the character is, though.
Yeah, he's gross.
But the character is just, fat people. Lol. Imagine if people found them sexual or attractive in some way. That'd be confronting. Yeah. Lol.
I think only humor that lies in Fat Bastard here is where he gets, like, super sincere, where he's like, you know, I've had a hard life being fat, and then straight away takes it back. That's funny, but...
Can I share something with you guys?
You may,
privately,
of course.
That let's say, I don't know, a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. So before this podcast was in my life, and you know,
and again, I am sorry.
my girlfriend and I were getting intimate one evening,
shaggy,
and then she said to me, I think one of the funniest things that's ever been said, she said in the Fat Bastard voice, "Get in my pussy." and I immediately lost my erection because I was laughing so hard.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us on Mic Check. I reckon there's not much else left to say there. Shall we try and check this movie? How do we feel about it today?
Okay, I feel like this is the definitive daddy issues film of Mike Myers. I feel like he's resolved his issues with this one. Unfortunately, I do know that the next stage includes The Love Guru, which was him dealing with spirituality and his feelings of loneliness in the universe. So... there's still some sadness there, but I feel happy if this is the final Austin Powers movie. Until Crystal Skull, obviously. Crystal Dildo?
Tom?
I don't think this is a good movie, but I like it and I'd recommend people to watch it. Mm. I think it's a bad film, but I really enjoy it a lot.
Alexi?
I think this is not a good movie, but it's a good movie for sure. I think it's best watched 5 times in a row. Just got to just watch it in really short, like just really short breaks in between it. And that's when you can truly appreciate and find it really funny.
This is like how the French would eat the ortolan only by drowning it in wine and then putting it in your mouth hole.
Yeah, but you need to do it while wearing a hood.
Yeah, so the best way to watch Goldmember is to set yourself up under a screen, experience a personal tragedy.
I genuinely think this...
You have to Clockwork Orange this movie.
I think generally this is the most I've enjoyed this movie now, is by watching it 12 times in 2 years. I think I never really cared for it much in my adolescence. I always thought it was the weakest Austin Powers movie. Still, obviously the weakest one, but I found strength in myself through watching this over and over again. And I think it's great. I think it's genuinely... I think it's really funny. It's excellent. There's some flab in it, but you don't have to... remember it afterwards.
Wow.
Wow.
Awesome.
Michael?
Look, all I have to say is get in my...
Ladies and gentlemen, please get in Michael Hing's pussy if you can. I don't know how. Maybe you can do that over Twitter at Hingers. Somehow there's a way.
It made you horny. That's awesome, dude.
That's all we could hope for.
That's
so fucking funny.
Guys, do you want to plug anything apart from Hing's girlfriend's pussy?
She listens to this podcast. She listens to this podcast.
Sorry, Hum.
You're a monster.
Sorry,
she listens to this podcast. And she said to me several times, I really like that podcast. It's one of the few comedy podcasts I really enjoy.
Oh, no.
Oh, does she think this is a comedy podcast?
This is actually quite serious. I take my research very seriously. Yeah.
This is actually a long meta project of two idiots falling into disrepair.
Can you guys please tell the people what they should check out of yours?
I'm in Adelaide Fringe. I'm there for the whole month, so come see my show, Beboo. And I'm also bringing it to Melbourne Comedy Festival and Sydney Comedy Festival. So
fabulous, darling.
Catch me there, baby. Groovy baby, shagadelic.
Can you imagine if Austin Powers was a monk in the Catholic Church? I think his chance would go a little bit like this. My comedy special is up on the ABC iView right now. If you search Michael Hing there, you better find that. And there's a new series coming out at SBS that I don't fucking know what it is yet. But we filmed portions of it, and it's about me doing comedy in regional towns, and it's real fucked. All the gigs have been fucked. So hopefully that'll be funny, because you're all anti-comedy lovers who just want to see me fail. So maybe that'll be funny. I don't fucking know, man.
That sounds awesome.
I want that so bad.
That sounds so
good. I hope this goes well.
The first ep involves me doing, trying to do, inner city stand up in front of a town full of Indian Sikh migrants and Indian Sikh locals in Woolgoolga.
Yep.
And let me tell you, it's in an RSL and it is what's the opposite of Molto Bene? It's Nolto Bad.
Who plays StarCraft 2?
I'm getting anxious just thinking about it. I can't wait to check that
out. You've also got Melbourne Comedy Festival coming up.
Yep, I'm doing my show in Perth Fringe, Brisbane Comedy Festival, and the Melbourne Comedy Festival. You can search for that, or you can find tickets on alist.com. Cameron James' show's called 88. It's very fun. Come and check it out. Groovy, babe. Yes. As if all this time later, I still didn't know the catchphrase.
Groovy, babe, yes. Guys, at the end of this podcast, stay tuned. I'm going to play a little special interview that our friend Eddie Sharp conducted with one of the actors that played Austin Powers' father in this film, Mr. Scott Aukerman, who plays his dad in the flashback sequence when he takes a piss and you just see the back of his head.
What?
Yeah.
That's Scott Aukerman?
Yeah, Scott Aukerman, creator of Comedy Bang Bang.
Oh, I want to hear this.
There'll be a 2-minute interview with Scott Aukerman at the end of this episode. I saved it till the end. Maybe I'll say it at the start of the podcast,
You should definitely say it at the start of the podcast. Nobody has gotten through us plugging our shit.
And, ladies and gentlemen, you can give us 5 stars on iTunes. And if you, in your review, if you could leave us the title for another very super specific actor-based podcast, we will do a spin-off episode of that maybe one day. We got a new one in today, 5 stars, from Me Tit. They said Austin Translation, and they would like us to do You and Me Forever, the films of Ewan McGregor.
Oh, wow.
I like how that almost rhymes. I think that's awesome, guys.
Did I tell you that...
Wrap it up. Just wrap it up.
We're saying goodbye now. Goodbye, babies. Bye-bye.
Last time this fucking podcast ruined my life because someone said that I had the same voice as Judith Lucy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
No, but that's true. You've known that for years.
No.
Bye.
See ya.
I've been doing some research on you, and it's you famously played the back of Michael Caine while he was taking a leak in Austin Powers' Goldmember. Mm-hmm. What did you do to get into that role?
It's an interesting story. I auditioned mm-hmm. for the role. I was told that I was going to be playing the young Michael Caine in Goldmember.
Right.
I worked up a Michael Caine impression, of which I do not remember, as it was 15 years ago at least. Uh-huh. I went and auditioned. I got the role.
Yeah.
I went to the studio to meet Mike Myers and Jay Roach. Jay Roach is the director of the film. Before shooting, to talk to them about the role. And I talked to them, just chatted with them. We have mutual friends, and they knew what Mr. Show was. So I chatted with them for about 20 minutes, and then they said, "All right, well, turn around." And I thought this was some sort of weird show business thing. Like, what am I turning around for?
Yeah, casting couch.
I turned around and they said, "That'll be perfect." And I didn't know what they were talking about. I got to the set and found out that they were cutting in scenes of the actual young Michael Caine to use in the movie. And all I was going to be was the back of his head.
And so you really prepped. I was kind of joking.
Actually did prep for it, and then it was very surprising. That's not the only time that something like that has happened to me in show business. I once got cast in a commercial, and I auditioned, I improv for it, and I was like, I came out of the audition, I went, I nailed that. Like, I was so funny in that. I rarely think that.
Yeah.
I got the role, and when I got to the commercial, they said, "Okay, you're going to stand in the background and push this box back and forth." And I realized I was just an extra in the commercial.
You're right. It sounds like a Law and Order sort of setup.
It actually does. Like, you know, while someone...
Give
just
some information.
All right, yeah, sure, I saw her, but I didn't kill her.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast by Mike Myers.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.